Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Adore.fm, and ChiroRadio.com, and wherever else podcasts are available. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 303 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week, albeit a little bit late. Which has kind of turned into my MO, huh? Yeah. Always going up just a little bit late, like a day late. Sometimes I just have a real hard time getting this thing out, man. And, you know, those of you with children, with families, you can understand. You can understand why. Got some sick kids in the house right now. I'm not feeling great. It is early Tuesday morning. We're going to try to get this out for you on somewhat of a schedule. See? A little bit sick. I'm not lying, folks. Not feeling the top of my game. Not feeling it. But we've got a great show for you this week. My friend, close friend, longtime friend, Luke Burbank, is going to be joining us here shortly. I had the pleasure of going out on his boat and recording a chat about bad interviews. Okay, Luke had a interview with the band Sigur Rós a long time ago. I think it was like 2007 or something like that, when he was doing an NPR show called The Bryant Park Project in New York City, and the thing kind of went viral. Because it didn't turn out great. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be focusing on interviews that did not go well. And at the end of the show, we've got one from me, which is about 2 minutes long and, just a really, really did not go well. I don't even know what else to say about it. But we had a great time chatting about these two horrible interviews that both of us have done, and we came to the conclusion that it wasn't our fault. The interviews, because they were bad, it was because the bands, man. It was because the bands. So we're going to be featuring a terrible interview with Sigur Rós that Luke did back in 2007, and then. At the end of the show, we're going to be featuring this tape that I got with guitar legend, honky tonk guitar legend Junior Brown. That from the get go just started out real bad, and did not end well. So we'll be getting into that shortly. I wanted to read a couple emails before we get into things here. Oh, and remind you guys that we are now available on Google Play. So if you use Google Play for your podcatcher, or you get your podcasts from the Google Play Store, you can now find Air Raid there. Okay. All right. Let's get to this first one. I just happened to sign on to LinkedIn just on a whim. I don't even know why I signed on to it, but I just signed on to it, and I saw that I had a message there. It was from our friend over in New York City, Stephen Kopfer, who is a wonderful person and actually joined me after a hurricane hit New York City, or the one that hit New Jersey a few years back, and we chatted about that on air raid. So if you'd like to go, and I failed to go and see what episode number that is, but you can go to the archives at air-raid.net and check that one out. Steven is a wonderful, wonderful fan, and he's been following us for many years. And he just writes this, a very simple, lovely little message. Congrats on the Air Raid anniversary. Hope you're doing well from your original New York fan, Steven Kopfer. Thank you so much, Steven. Steven's doing a lot of cool things, man, over there in New York. He's training people on movie sets, how to do martial arts and this fighting style called Sambo. I think that's correct. And I think he was also working on a TV show about underground MMA in New York, which I don't know if that's come out yet. So, Steven, let me know if that's come out. We can push some people that way. All right, buddy. Okay, let's see. Next message here from Charlotte. Listener Charlotte, who I actually went to high school with. Wonderful lady out there in Virginia. What is that? Barstow, Virginia? I can't remember now. God darn it. Bristow, Virginia. This one from Charlotte. Let's see. The Carpenter interview was awesome. But I have to say the taxidermy and Fogarty stories had me cracking up. Thank you so much, Charlotte. And thanks for listening. And thanks for spreading the word, right? Yeah. Steven, Charlotte, spread the word about the Air Raid podcast. If you dig it, let's get some more people listening to it, right? And this from our wonderful listener, my favorite listeners right now. I apologize to Steven, apologize to Charlotte, apologize to everybody else. But Robert Stewart from Florida is wonderful. He's a wonderful person. He continues to donate to the show and continues to write me pretty much every week, which I really, really appreciate because it makes me feel good. Let's see. Let's read what Robert said here. Listen to show number 291 this morning. In fucking credible, man. Guts for miles coming from you, kind sir. I'm starting to piece it together and hope the best for your loved ones. I'm an atheist, so no bullshit about prayers. Thanks, buddy. Much appreciated, sir. I look forward to each new show and love going back to old shows in between. My favorite part is checking out new bands from your show. Either mentioned, i.e. the Chicago bands you and Warren Spicer mentioned, or Meat Hair mentioned by Jessica on show 213. By the way, absolutely love Deep Sea Diver. Bummed when I got the vinyl and Peter, instead of Jessica, wrote the thank you. Well, got to get back to work, Robert. P.S. I think it's still cool to smoke the Mota. Well, there you go, buddy. I think we all do here at Air Raid Studios. Thank you guys for the email. If you'd like to get in touch with me directly, you can email me at aaron@air-raid.net. We're also on Twitter. Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet, and you can follow us there and send me a message or tweet at us. And we really appreciate you guys spreading the word about the show, man. It's been going pretty good. Last week's show with John Carpenter and Chris Cunningham of the band Ravenna Woods was a lot of fun, and seemed to get some pretty solid feedback from that. So that's really great. Thank you all for listening. Okay, so, like I said, I went out on Luke's boat, the General Lee, and we were just having a fun time out on the water on Lake Union here in Seattle, and we decided to record this show. Rather than coming back to the studio, we decided to record it out on the water. So there is going to be a little bit of background noise. There might be some wind, and there's definitely quite a few seaplanes that are flying over us. So I'm going to try to cut that up and get some of that that ambiance taken out. Not all of it, because we want to be put into a place, right? When we listen to things like podcasts. But yeah, sometimes the planes were getting a little much, man. But it's a lot of fun. This chat is a lot of fun, and so let's get right into it. This is going to be a little bit of a different episode, but you know, I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. So this is our chat with Mr. Luke Burbank, dear friend of mine, about some of our worst, or a couple of our worst interviews ever. Enjoy.
Like, out of my comfort zone when I'm not in the studio.
You ever feel that way? Does that matter to you?
Yeah. The way that I notice that for me is when I'm on the road, which I have been a lot lately.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in some hotel room, and I basically am supposed to be out of the room because it's like 1 o'clock where I am. But because Walsh is on the West Coast, the time difference, it's like, you know, 10 for him or something.
Yeah.
So I will, like, hand make a paper note that says for housekeeping that I have a late checkout and I'm allowed to stay in the room longer.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't have that on any authority. I just put it out there hoping that they'll just kind of buy it.
You're just hoping it works.
And then there's like a whole thing with the internet connectivity. I have a mobile hotspot that's supposed to be the fastest they make.
Yeah.
But it usually is a little bit in and out.
Well, the weird thing about it is that doing a podcast should be inherently not stressful. Right?
I don't necessarily
Isn't that the
agree
point?
With that. No, I actually
kind
don't.
Of?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that there's this rumor out there that the best conversations are the ones where you're just like totally relaxed, man, and you're just like don't even realize you're making a show. But that's, I think, why so many podcasts are terrible. Because I think a certain amount of, I'm not saying that I do this on any of the shows that I work on. I'm just saying from a sort of platonic ideal standpoint, I think a little bit of stressing about it going okay.
Right.
And thinking, like, this is not just a regular conversation. This is a regular conversation that's amped up by, say, 30%.
Sure.
I think that is, to me, that's sort of the right level.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am definitely...
Because it keeps you on your toes, right?
Yeah.
To a certain extent?
Well, and also, yeah, when you're hosting... I mean, there's a difference between conversations that you would just have with your friend or your husband or wife when you're watching TV and a conversation that people want to tune into.
Mm-hmm.
Download to their phone or get on their computer and seek out and then listen to, I think.
Right. Right.
And, I mean, I'm really setting the bar high for the next 30 minutes to an hour of your listeners' lives, but I do think that...
Well, this whole show, this whole episode is devoted to the two worst interviews that you and I have ever done, quite possibly in our careers, right?
Well, I mean, I've got a decent portfolio of really bad interviews. The one that you're referencing that I guess we're going to talk about is the one that got the most attention.
Sure.
Because it was on YouTube kind of in the early days of, really, of YouTube, I think. But I've done some other real doozies.
Well, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. But,
sure.
So what do you, like, when you first got started doing radio-type things... Like, what did you feel about, like having to interview somebody? Were you always kind of, you know, like you said before, just kind of, you know, trying to keep yourself ahead of it and on your toes a little bit? Were you always a little bit nervous?
Well, I got warmed up to the idea of doing interviews because I was a reporter before I was a host.
Right.
And so you do a lot of interviews as a reporter, and you don't use the whole thing. You're just trying to get, like,
one piece out of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a pretty talkative guy. I feel like I have few gifts, but one of them seems to be that I can make a conversation with most people.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it, when I started actually hosting things, that part of it seemed fairly natural. But what I have learned over time now is that there is a bit of an art to it. And it's, again, to go back to the previous thing, it isn't just having a regular conversation. You have to be really managing the situation a bit as the interviewer, and I did not, in the case of the band Sigur Rós, I did not manage the situation very well at all. If I were doing that interview now, you know, God, 15 years later?
You'd hope it would go differently.
I think it would, because I just think I am a little bit... I mean, I don't know if you want to just jump right into talking about that interview, but I can just tell you that I spent a lot of time in my early days sort of like a duck where they seem fairly calm above the surface of the water, but their feet are furiously paddling underwater.
Right, right.
That would, in the Sigur Rós interview, that was very much what was going on, was I was internally panicking hardcore.
Well, from the first, and maybe we should play just a little bit of this interview right now, kind of the intro to it, because from the first moment.
Yeah.
You can tell that they aren't having it.
Do you want to hear a little bit of context for how
it
happened?
Well, yeah, let's hear that first.
Okay.
Sure.
So at this time, Sigur Rós was not a super well-known band. They were, you know, sort of indie.
Sure.
And they were managed by Nasty Little Man Records PR company.
Mm-hmm.
That's the PR company that was started by the Beastie Boys.
Right.
Which is why that record's called Hello Nasty, because somebody at the label would answer the phone, Hello Nasty, at the front desk. So Nasty Little Man also had in their portfolio, second time I used portfolio.
Good job, man.
It's apparently the word of the day. Nasty Little Man also handled the Arcade Fire.
Oh, okay.
And so this deal was made with Nasty Little Man. If you have this band, Sigur Rós, that nobody knows about,
then
I was
you can
a fan,
have
then you can have the Arcade Fire.
On.
So it was kind of a quid pro quo. Now, I was already a fan of Sigur Rós, so I was very into it.
Yeah.
But I had to pitch it to the other people associated with the show.
The show was the Bryant Park Project.
Yeah, in New York.
On NPR.
It was supposed to be kind of like a hip, cool morning show on NPR, mm-hmm. which was... I just to this day, my mind reels when I think of what the logic was for that, because
right.
Morning Edition is the most popular show NPR creates. I'm not really sure who the demo was for this show, or even at a station level. I don't know what radio stations they thought were going to put it on.
I didn't realize it was morning.
Yeah, it was ass early.
Really?
I mean, there were so many crazy things. Like, it was so early the subway didn't run when you went in, so we all had town cars bringing us in. Like the
show was paying for that?
Yeah. The interns were being driven in town cars to our studios in Manhattan.
That's kind of doomed from the start, huh?
Oh, my God. The thing was just... Somebody just put a pile of pledge dollars
right.
in the middle of, Fifth Avenue in New York and just lit it on fire. It was ridiculous. And the funny part is, when they approached me about doing this show, I said to them, just how about give me one producer... And that's a co-host person who I vibe with.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, don't talk to us for 2 years. And I bet you we'll come up with some cool stuff.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, that sounds like a good plan. And then when they hired me, they immediately hired, like, 20 producers. This lady from MTV who is, like, a personality black hole.
Yeah.
She is so lacking in personality that other personality was actually drawn into her lack of personality, causing all kinds of problems on a sort of astronomical scale.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... So we're there.
The space-time continuum.
Yeah, it was just really touching. You don't even know how close this whole universe got to just imploding based on her boringness. But a classic conversation from her was that we were doing some kind of a music segment, and Kenny Chesney came up, and I was like, well, that guy's terrible. And then afterwards, she said, like in the post-show meeting, she said, you can't say that. I was like, why? She was like, because what about people who like Kenny Chesney? I was like, well, then maybe they'll send an email, and then we can engage them on that level. But to her, it was like to say that anything was not great was somehow violating some kind of
right
public radio credo. So long story longer, we agreed to have Sigur Rós on, and I went to bat for them by saying in the pitch meeting they sing in a made up language called Hopelandish.
Yeah,
and everyone was like, people had been in the meeting kind of like, oh, Sigur Rós, I don't know, Iceland. And then when I said they sing in a made-up language, they were like, okay.
Yeah.
So that
so
was
at this time, though, what year are we talking about? Was that 2007?
Probably.
2006?
Probably 2007.
So at that time, that was, I remember that being big conversation on like stations like KAXP.
Sigur Rós?
The fact
language.
That they had this whole made-up language. That
yeah, that was definitely when people wrote about them at the time.
Yeah, yeah,
that was kind
yeah.
of the first thing that
was
a
talking
said.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would later come back to really bite me in the dong.
Well, let's take a quick listen to how this thing started out.
Okay.
Because I think it's very telling, like, from the first moments that
people are
going to
hear
having.
Me. I wanted to make a good impression by pronouncing their names correctly.
Yes.
And
right.
I did that really annoying white guy thing. Where I'm talking normally, and then I go into like a weirdly accented
your
pronunciation.
Best my best accent.
My best Hopelandish.
Shit. All right, here we go.
Sigur Rós is Jon Birgersson on guitars and vocals, Kjartan Svensson on keyboards, Ori Pál Djarsson on drums, and Georg Holm on bass. How did I do with those names, guys?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what are your first thoughts like when things obviously take a turn? What are your first thoughts like you said earlier? You're a duck. You're a calm duck on top, but a panicky duck on bottom. Like you're just treading water here.
Well, I had probably 3 pages of questions.
Okay.
And I think I burned through all 3 pages within the first 45 seconds of the interview.
Oh, my God.
And so I was...
And this is live, right?
No, this never went on the air.
Oh, it didn't?
No.
Oh.
This was a pre-taped thing.
I was
thing.
Under the impression that it was live.
No, thankfully, it would have probably been a... I mean, we were on, like, 2 stations. So mm-hmm. live for us...
Right, right.
...was a sort of academic question, really.
Sure.
We were taping it actually after we had done the full episode of the show. The show was 2 hours a day of live radio.
Right.
And so afterwards, the guys came in and, you know, they were really jet lagged. They had all flown in from, mm-hmm. I guess, Iceland probably.
Yeah.
And it sort of dawned on me. It dawned on me 1 minute in that this was really, really not going well.
Did you start out playing this kind of music, or did you start out as a more, people might think, regular sounding band, and then did you kind of go here as you experimented?
I don't know. I think we probably just started out playing like this.
I mean, what was the first time that you guys sat down with your instruments and started playing? Did you have this thought, we want to create this very specific kind of music? Because the stuff that you make doesn't sound like a lot of other stuff that's out there. Or did you get to that right away?
Yeah, I think we probably did. I don't think we didn't sit down and talk about, oh, we want to play this type of music or something. It was just...
Yeah. And the other thing about doing an interview like that when you're doing a big radio show is that there's just a room full of people behind the glass. There's all Sigur Rós's handlers. Mm-hmm. There's all of, I wouldn't say my handlers, but there's like producers from the show. There's like a room full of people who are all on their faces registering how shittily this is going. And I'm looking past Sigur Rós at this wall of confused, disappointed, and in some cases angry faces.
Yeah. So the video on YouTube does not show you. The one that I've seen does not show you at all. I don't think. Does it ever show your face?
I think so because, well, I mean the original version we put out, because what happened was that we had a full-time video guy named Wynn Rosenfeld who is amazing.
Oh, your friend to this day.
Yes, exactly.
Wynn, yeah.
So he was the videographer, not just videographer, but he was the video editor of all things Bryant Park Project related, yeah. Which was like kind of the one thing they got right. So he would always shoot stuff. So he shot that. And afterwards, everybody was like, well, that's not going on the radio.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, Wynn, will you just trim like trim the heads and tails of that? And like, let me see what that looks like. Because that was so bad that could be...
like a viral video.
That could be... And this was like... This is the really early days of even that viral video thing happening, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, we should put that out. And, you know, I mean, everything we were doing on that show was about trying to be, you know, digital and forward-thinking and
right.
totally futuristic. And, like, very little of it really had the desired effect. But that was the one thing. When we put that video up, that really took off like wildfire. within the interview, within the actual time... of the interview, I think it was kind of a blur for me because it was just so awkward and they were so not interested and I was just in way over my head.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we did later was we had a woman come in who was like a longtime Rolling Stone correspondent who interviewed hundreds of bands, and she basically did sort of like a breakdown of the interview.
Oh, you did?
And she gave me really good advice about how to interview bands. One is, and I'll let this...
this seaplane.
This Kenmore Air. We'd like to welcome Kenmore Air, new sponsor to the Air Raid podcast. Actually, dude, that would be so bitchin'.
Wouldn't it?
I just took one of those from Victoria down here.
Oh, it's so fun. It's so fun.
And it's like not crazy expensive. I think it's maybe $150. But, I mean, it's unlike anything you'll ever do in your life. It's about the best $150 you could spend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's super fun, and you get to see the place where you live and that you are very familiar with from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see it from the air, which is always a cool trip.
Most importantly, they let you leave your cell phone on, so you can play Pokemon Go while you're up
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right.
So this
it's a Pikachu in the cloud.
This woman. This reporter told me one thing. She said was, ask the questions to the drummer, because no one ever talks to the drummer. The drummer will be psyched to talk. The problem with band interviews is that the lead singer always gets all the questions.
Right.
And typically speaking, the lead singer is sick of answering questions. The other people in the band have this bizarre life where they sort of stand around quietly behind the lead singer during interviews, oftentimes. So one of the first things I did that was a huge mistake was I just threw questions out generally.
Right, right. You didn't really point at a person or like, you know, make eye contact with who you were asking the question to.
Right. I don't even remember all of their names now.
Well, they were very, you know, fairly difficult for a guy like you and me.
Four of them were named Hodor. And then one was...
And one was just hold the door.
Yeah.
Right.
Oddly enough.
Yeah.
So what I should have done was... So let me just take it... Let me explain it this way. If I was doing that interview now, this is what I would do. First of all, I would probably be like, I don't want the whole band in here.
Yeah. See, that's one of the things with me.
Mm-hmm.
Is like I do way better one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Except for... With the exception of what we're about to talk about. And I stopped doing full band... quite some time ago because it was just too hard to manage.
Right, because it's sort of you against them.
Right.
And they're all kind of thinking, first of all, they're performing for each other.
Yeah,
or
they've
not
got
performing.
Inside jokes. They've got, you know, I mean, they talk over each other, you know, things like that.
I would have been much more, like, strict about the rules for the interview in terms of,
mm-hmm.
it probably would have just been Hodor and Hold the Door.
Right.
Just those two.
Yeah.
It probably would have been the lead singer. Jonesy, is that his name?
Yes.
Jonesy? Probably would have been the lead singer and, like, one other dude, maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was a mistake. What I would do now, though, is if I had to interview the whole band, I would have made a little cheat sheet for myself, and it would have had each one of their names, and it would have had their names in the position in the room where they were sitting.
Right.
And then I would have taken the questions, and I would have divided them up into thirds or fourths or whatever it was.
Sure.
And I would have asked specifically... different members of the band the questions.
Yeah.
I would have
said,
hey, Jonesy, tell me about when you did this, you know? And then the other thing I would have done that I would do now that I didn't do then is when I say something to Jonesy and he just looks at me with confusion and slight derision and kind of gives me a one or two word answer, I was duck paddling so fast that I was just like, on to the next question. What I would do now, like I do this show Livewire.
Would you double down?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it usually is fine. I do this show Livewire, and we had Chuck Palahniuk on, the dude that wrote Fight Club.
Right.
He's a nice guy, but he's extremely awkward. And what I found out later in an email from him was that he had taken a Xanax and had a glass of red wine because he was nervous about being on stage.
Uh-huh.
But the way that sort of manifested in him was that he was just being weirdly standoffish. And this is in front of, you know, 1,200 people.
Yeah.
So we get... 3 minutes in, and he just, every question I'm asking him, which are like relevant questions about his work and his life and everything, he's just being really coy and like not wanting to answer them. And I just said to him, hey, Chuck, what would you like to talk about? And it was
I have done that myself.
Did it work?
Yes.
Yeah, it was kind
it did.
Of, it was sort of a power move, and it totally worked, and he completely like... Now, here's the other thing. Most of the time, even in the case of Sigur Rós, and I haven't yet heard your tape, so I look forward to analyzing that in
yes.
a minute. But most of the time, people who are super bad interviews are not trying to be dicks.
No, they're looking for direction is basically what I've come up with in certain circumstances.
I think they're often nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes they can be nervous depending on if it's like there's a crowd.
Yeah.
Even people who you wouldn't think would be nervous can get a little nervous. And also they think like, oh, I'm not going to be interesting if I just give you a regular answer.
Right.
So I have to be interesting by giving you something that's like more clever than you'd expect or more slightly offbeat. And usually that is not as good as them just giving you a straight fucking answer.
Sure. Yeah.
So because I've had really, really bad interviews where the person felt like they were being almost sort of like intentionally not aggressive, but just like intentionally not being a good interview partner on the stage. And then I say, you know, so and so, and the band plays them off, and they shake my hand and they're like, I'll let this plane do its thing.
You know, I think he's actually doing that on purpose.
It's possible that that's one of the members of Sigur Rós.
Yeah. Hey, there's that fucker Luke.
Oh my God, he's doing another interview. He's dining out again on that one thing that he did with us. I've had really bad interviews where the person seemed like they were just being intentionally obstinate, and then the interview's over. This is mostly in the context of that show, Livewire. But then I'll give another example. We had on TBTL, we had the comedian Brody Stevens on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's an interesting...
That was a while ago, right?
Yeah. It was, I think what happened was he was doing a show with Neil Hamburger.
Right.
Who I am a huge fan of.
Was that one of the laugh hole things that was being put on a while back?
Very possibly. So Brody Stevens, who's a guy whose persona is being sort of like really kind of amped up and aggressive, and he's just like he's sort of in a permanent Charlie Sheen mode, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
He's doing that whole thing, and I'm like, man, this guy is really... We're like at Cairo recording this, and I'm like, man, this guy is really just like not helping me here. I'm asking him kind of a normal question, and he's giving me...
Oh, he came in.
Oh, yeah.
It was an in-person.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we get done, and like we turn the mics off, and he goes from being like... So I'll do an impression of him when he's, you know, in the interview. He's like, I'm like, you know, Brody, you used... Oh, because one of the things I was interested to talk to him about was that he used to do a public access show in Seattle called Tano and Brody, Our Friends.
Really?
Back when I was like in high school. I was...
Wait, is he from Seattle?
He lived up here. He moved up here to do comedy.
No shit.
So it was like this really bizarro public access show, and I loved it. So I was like, I'm probably one of the few people that's going to interview him that was into this show.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was another mistake. That's another interviewing mistake, is going into the interview with thinking
that you have something special.
I have this talisman that I'm going to play.
Yeah.
I have this... I don't know enough fucking D&D terminology. Is sort of wounding a thing? I have this whatever, this thing that I'm going to deploy. Because then you start to think, like, in the case of Sigur Rós, it was the Hope Landish question.
Right.
That was, I thought, going to be my, like, bring it home question.
Well, and that's why I asked.
Jan, if I could ask you a question that I think you probably are tired of answering, but it's one that I think everyone is curious about as soon as they get into Sigur Rós, which is Hope Landic. You're shaking your head.
Yeah.
This is the language, I guess, that's... Is it most of the lyrics, some of the lyrics, all of the lyrics?
Sist.
Now, that's not Hope Landic. I think that is English.
I know.
It's just... You're saying Hope Landic is just...
No, this is something that some journalist created.
You didn't ever say that. So is it Icelandic? What the lyrics? What are they?
Hmm.
It's just no lyrics. It's just blah 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 blah.
La la.
La la la. It's just gibberish. Doesn't mean anything.
I mean, it doesn't mean anything. If you do it the same time every time, does it start to take on a meaning for you?
No. No.
Did you start off with more traditional lyrics and work towards the gibberish, or was that the first thing you started with?
It's just kind of natural, you know, when you're a singer, to, you know, if you don't have any lyrics and you just
sing,
you know.
Is this, do you think, going to be going forward, Jan, how you lyrically want to approach music, or do you ever think that you'll start to use more standard words?
I don't know.
Well, we'll see how this goes, because I think I did pretty bad the first time through, but Jan Bergesen, Kjartan Svensson, Ori Paul Djarsson, and Georg Holm, Sigur Rós, thank you guys very much for coming on the Bryant Park Project.
Thank you.
Had it already been the time where they were getting that question a lot?
Mm.
Because they really didn't like that question.
No, Jonesy was, you know, as people will hear in the interview, if we play the rest of it, as people heard in the interview that we just played, he just was like, he was totally over it. And
Zeppelin.
Just think of it as a theater of the mind, Roden.
Right, right.
We've taken the Air Raid listeners out on a boat trip.
I'm watching this buoy that we got
Should I kind of take a minute here?
No, I think we're going to go right past it.
All right, good. Good looking out, though, because I don't want to hit anything.
I was watching. I was watching.
None of the paperwork is up to date on this boat. I'm not even kidding.
Right.
Which is, should come as no surprise to anybody who knows me. But so with Brody Stevens, I was, like, excited to talk to him about this public access show. And I was like, you know, hey, you're on that public access show. I used to really like it. And his response was like, building my career, stepping stones, moving to Los Angeles. Arizona, pitcher, top three, Pac-10, 1992, excellence, determination, picking up friends in different places. Like, that's what he does. His thing is he just does this sort of string of, like, affirmation comments or something.
Okay.
He doesn't, like, talk the way that we talk when he's doing his shtick. Okay, so point being, the interview's done, we turn the mics off, and he's like, oh, hey, man, was that okay? Was that too over the top? Like, the persona dropped completely, and he was so nice and so, like, and so I've had stuff happen like that a lot where somebody who's been not great has not been doing it intentionally, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there. But with old Sigur Rós, I also don't think they were trying to intentionally be a bad interview. I just think that they were – if I did the interview now, I think it would have gone a lot better because I think I would have just – you know, not unlike the song, they need a man with a... Wait, I was going to say a man with a strong hand, but I think it's Slow Hand, right?
I know Eric Clapton has an album named Slow Hand.
There's a song called, like, I Need a Man with a Slow Hand. That's probably like a Reba McEntire.
Yeah, I don't think that's Sigur Rós.
No, and I don't think it really applies to this conversation. so I shouldn't have even brought it up. Anyway.
Well, I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, the way that I've conducted my show over the last 6 years is like having conversations with people who I'm a fan of and who I feel like I already have some sort of connection to and know something about, right? And therefore, I don't do a whole lot of research, you know, with the exception of a few people. And when I lined up this Junior Brown interview, I was very, very excited because Junior Brown was one of the first albums that my uncle had given me when I was 13 years old and I started playing guitar.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, okay, you're going to start playing guitar. You're playing the blues, you know. I was a little white boy playing blues music. And he gave me...
Well, you knew what it was like in the struggle.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, growing up in Indianola.
Yeah,
sure. Very white.
Solidly
white
middle
place.
Class.
Exactly. And he wants to introduce me to slide guitar, so he gives me a Roy Buchanan record and a Junior Brown record. And I remember being super enthralled with this Junior Brown record and just in love with it for the fact that I had seen him in Guitar Player magazine. He had invented his own, like, this slide guitar, which has a real guitar neck and a slide and a lap steel neck connected to each other. Designed this thing. He plays it all the time. Used to play with the Beach Boys. And I was just so excited that this thing was going to happen, right? And I felt like I knew my shit.
See, I was kind of wondering why you booked him. Not because I'm not... I've heard him, plenty of times. I would say that I've enjoyed his music when I've heard it. I probably wouldn't go to a show of his. But it didn't seem similar to a lot of the bands that you have on Air Raid.
Well, and that was part of it, too, is that I wanted to branch out. This was a step in the direction of, like, you know, maybe talking to some of the guys that, you know, influenced me as a kid that maybe weren't in the indie music spectrum, you know. And so I wanted to kind of branch out, and I reached out to Junior's camp, and they said, hell yeah, let's do it.
And that's when things to go terribly wrong.
Yeah. So I show up to the Neptune Theater. A lot of these times I have to go down and meet them because they're on tour. They're not going to come up to the house. And I go down to the Neptune Theater, and first bad sign of this interview was that I had to wait an hour.
Oh, no.
They were an hour late. He was out because he was out to dinner. And I said, you know what? It's fucking fine. This is Junior Brown. He can do whatever he wants. I get to talk to him.
But then you found out he was out to dinner at the Qdoba across the street, and you're like, how long does that even take, dude? Yeah,
exactly. So I'm waiting around for an hour, and he finally comes in, and he's super nice. He asked me, you know, where the green room is, so I show him where the green room is, and he says something to the effect of, of, you know, I've played so many shows since the 1960s, I can't remember if I've played this venue before. And so we kind of, you know, talked about that a little bit as we're walking up. And I thought we had started a good rapport.
Yeah, that sounds promising.
You know, do you ever do that in your interviews? Like you start things off without anything recording and you build some sort of, like, connection with the person?
I probably should.
Yeah.
More, but I've kind of gotten a little weird about this in the last few years, which is I like to, I don't want to ask people the same questions a bunch of times.
Sure.
And a lot of the questions, I mean, yeah, sometimes what I'll do is I'll talk about something with them that I know there's no chance in hell that it's going to be relevant to the radio show, or, like, I've started doing TV stuff now, which is also really weird because it takes forever to light that shit.
Yeah.
And so you're just sitting on a stool, like, with the person you're going to be interviewing, and there's, like, an additional 45 minutes of them tweaking all the lights.
Yeah.
But you don't want to, like, use up all of your conversation with them.
Right, right.
So then you have to talk about things that are so exceedingly banal because you just have to be like, you know, some weather we're having. How about that ball team? Just stuff, you know. When you really, like, you know, I want to ask, like, why are you dressed like Santa in Branson, Missouri in fucking July?
Yeah.
So I know what you're talking about, though, and that's always a good feeling when you think this person is, they're talkative and friendly, this is going to be good.
Yeah. And so to start this thing out, and we'll play a little bit of the interview here in just a second. And let me get this thing fired up here.
I'm very proud of your ingenuity, Roden, that you have brought your JBL wireless speaker. We'd like to welcome a new sponsor, JBL, to the Air Raid podcast.
That's right.
And your phone so you can play this.
So I can play this thing. So we get up into the room, and I'm setting things up.
Okay.
And Junior, Mr. Brown, starts telling me that he really likes his interviewers to be prepared. And I felt like I was.
Well,
I was,
yeah.
I was not. I've been listening to the guy since I was 13 years old. I was not, you know, I was not new to the interview game. And I felt like I knew what was going on.
Okay.
So let's take a listen to how this starts out.
I can work with that.
God damn it.
Do you like being called Junior or Jameson?
Yeah, that's another thing I don't like too much.
What's that?
Being asked that question.
Oh, okay. So I should I just use Junior? Okay.
So to make sure that I was on his good side, I wanted to ask him what I should refer to him as. This was not supposed to be part of the interview.
Right, okay.
Right?
Or Mr. Brown?
This is getting off to a rough start.
Oh, no.
I'm telling you, right quick.
Okay, so here's when I start really doing the duck move.
I have to tell you,
about.
I mean, okay, you know, 5 seconds into this piece of tape,
yeah.
I think you're doing a good job. Like, I think you handled that well.
Yeah.
When he said, like, you know, I don't like being asked that question, you were like, oh, really? Like, you had sympathy in your voice?
Yeah.
You were still sort of on his team, which I think was a good move, actually.
Yeah. But I think this is where it turned, obviously, this is the very beginning, it turns sour because he is thinking, and this is just me guessing, he is thinking, I have no idea who this fucking guy is. Right?
Yeah, he thinks you don't know who he is.
Right. Exactly. So, awkward silence.
After
he said
that.
I
mean,
and so I'm kind of gathering myself.
I want to hear the whole thing.
Okay.
But I just, very, at the very early level of, early amount of hearing this, the guy sounds like a world-class dick.
There's more news to come on that. So how many shows do you think you've played? When we were walking up here, you said, you know, these places, these venues start to kind of meld together in the years that you've been doing this.
Yeah, I've played a bunch of them. I've been working in clubs and on stages since the late 60s, so quite a few years.
Yeah?
A lot of clubs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have a rough number of how many you think you've done?
No.
No?
That's a helpful answer.
I'm gonna come up with a number.
This is where I doubled down.
Oh, I don't know, man. I'm just trying to make conversation with you.
Yeah, I don't feel like this interview is going anywhere. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Wow.
At this point,
was he drunk?
Hold that thought. At this point, he is standing. He is now standing over me and pointing at me like
How
he
old
is my
this
dad.
Guy?
He's probably in his either late 60s, early 70s. So at this point, he is standing over me, wagging his finger at me, telling me to do my homework, that I should not be, you know, coming into this, not doing my homework and stuff. And I am just dumbfounded, of course. Like, I don't know what to say in this moment.
I think we need to have some... You need to do your homework before you do something like this, you know? It's just not something you can just come up and start asking me what my name is and that kind of thing. So,
well,
sorry to disappoint you.
Okay.
What I had in mind.
All right.
Like, I want to apologize. I want to tell him that I've been listening to him since I was 13, try to patch things up. But really, realistically, there's no fucking patching this thing up, right?
No, the only thing I think you could do here would be just, like, a superpower move of just... you could try to big dog him.
Yeah.
Which he probably... I mean, like, you could literally fist fight him, maybe, and if he won, then he has to do the interview.
He's a big guy.
I mean, he's old, though. I mean, he probably... his internal organs are probably just shot from drinking.
Yeah,
I mean, he probably couldn't take a... liver punch.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing where if you tussled with him verbally and or physically, there might be a kind of thing where he's like, I respect the cut of your jib. What can I tell you? What can I do you for? But you'd have to, like...
I never thought about that, but that's a real possibility.
It's an illegal way to do interviews because it does involve assault.
Right.
But, I mean, listen, dude, absolutely nothing you did or said warranted this kind of behavior from him. It makes me think... that he didn't want to do the interview.
That is very apparent. It came up. I was emailing our mutual friend Kevin Sir about this.
Oh, right.
And he was like, yeah, you should post this. You should put this out. Because I was like, should I do something with this tape? And he was like, yeah, totally. Totally you should. And so he said, you know what? Maybe he's an addict. And he needed a fix. And needed to get you out of the room.
Ooh.
Because he immediately, after he stood there and wagged his finger at me, went straight into the bathroom and slammed the door. And so I'm
left
there.
Or he has Crohn's. I mean, that could have been it, too. Like, I mean, I've been in that spot before.
Just really needs to shit.
Where I'm just like, I don't care what people think of me.
Right.
I can't stand her anymore because I need to hit that John.
Yeah. Well, it came out a little bit later that Junior Brown's a huge asshole and a huge alcoholic. So,
How did it come out a little bit later?
I posted it on Facebook, and some people and some bands that had played with them got in touch. And
wow, bands!
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, that's not a good character reference.
No,
If the people who've played music with you are, I mean, what bugs me is that dudes like that. I mean, he's not famous. He's respected.
He is very respected.
He's legendary. He's legendary in a certain kind of, I want to say, niche.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he's an extremely virtuosic musician.
Yeah.
But it still bugs me that somebody like that can just treat people like shit and get to keep doing their thing.
Right.
Because that just doesn't seem fair.
Well, and after an instance like this, too, you start to second guess yourself. And that's where my mind immediately goes when something like this goes awry. Right?
Because
you want people, you want, like, my type of personality, I want these guys to like me and to respect me. There's a lot of fucking planes over this lake.
Turns out Kenmore Air is doing...
not bad.
Really, really good amount of business, because while we've been sitting here, over 87 planes have landed, 70 of them piloted by Junior Brown.
And I'm too lazy to cut any of it out.
No way, dude. It's welcome to the real world, everybody.
That's right.
I can imagine that what happened was some person at the label, who's his label?
I can't remember, but... the person who set up the interview was his manager, who is also his wife, who is also his rhythm guitar player, who was there, and I met. Now, when I walked out...
was she the one just crying tears of blood all day? Is that how you knew her? She's like, I'll be the one sobbing in a corner quietly because I'm married to this dick face.
She was eating curry, and I walk out. She's in the other green room across from the main green room at the Neptune. You know it. And I walk out, and it's literally 2 minutes later, and I have my bag, and I'm like, thanks. I guess. And then I walk off. I look at her, and she waves, and she smiles, and she goes, okay, have a good one. Like, how do you not, like, figure that something went wrong in there?
Because she's not timing these things. She's in a curry fever dream.
Yeah.
She's, you know, she's doing her.
Or
she's
it's just
moss.
A normal
or
thing.
Or that's a normal thing.
Right.
But, I mean, that's really frustrating because, I mean, I'm glad you're putting this guy somewhat on blast because that's just terrible behavior. And mm-hmm. I do think, I said there's nothing you could have done different. I wonder if literally your opening gambit would have been, hey, I've been listening to you since I was 13 years old.
I think that would have made things different.
Because then he would have been like, oh, this guy loves me and gets me. But you shouldn't have to do that in order for someone to treat you like a decent human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's a sort of its own trap to fall into that you have. Yeah. Like, because then, like, I had an experience when I was I was an intern on a sports radio station. And my job was to call up these athletes that were about to come on the show and, you know, get them routed through the phone system and stuff.
Sure.
And one time we were having Tony Dorsett on, the legendary Dallas Cowboys running back. And I guess he didn't know what time the interview was supposed to happen. So I call him and I'm like, hi, it's Luke from us. It's Luke calling from the Mikey and Vinny show.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? What are you calling me at this hour? I was like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Dorsett. Side note, I grew up, like, worshipping this guy because he was one of the most famous football players when I was a kid. It was like,
you just don't want to piss him off.
And he was like, what are you calling me right now? This is disrespectful. I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, they told me that you were scheduled to be on the show. I really apologize. We'll call you back later. Nah, I'll do it. Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Dorsett. Okay, I'm going to put you through to Mikey and Vinny. What? Why would you call me right now? What are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you saying you would rather not do the show? I really apologize. I was told that you were aware this interview was happening. Nah, I'll do it. And then every time I would say, like, okay, thank you. I'm going to, you know, punch you through. But you shouldn't call people at this hour. Like, it was just like this crazy-ass thing. And then when I finally got him on the line with them, it's like Mikey and Vinny are like, and now joining us, a Hall of Famer, Tony Dorsett. How you doing, guys? Da, da, da. And I was just like, you motherfucker.
So it wasn't like dementia. It was just him being
a
dick.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I've never thought of it that way, but it could. I don't know what his status is these days. I know his son also played in the league. I don't know if he's somebody who had CTE.
Yeah.
But what was weird to me was, as mean as he was to me, he was nice to the hosts.
Right.
So that doesn't seem like a person who's in the middle of an episode. That seems like a person who just has been treating...
Doesn't think highly of underlings.
And now let me give you a different example quickly. I know this is not really what we're here to talk about, but I was the phone screener, setter-upper guy for a show once that had John McCain on.
Mm.
And John McCain is the nicest motherfucker you'll ever... Like, he's talking to a random male voice on the other end of a line of a radio show he's about to do that is radio show number 30 that day for him.
Right.
He doesn't have to talk to people. He doesn't have to be nice. He's totally, like, conversational, nice, interested, just like a decent human. I'm not a guy who probably... Well, Lord knows I'd take John McCain this time around.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I don't know. He's been saying some pretty crazy shit lately.
I'd give up a toe for John McCain at this point. But I'm not traditionally, I wouldn't probably put myself in the John McCain camp.
Yeah.
That being said, he was a decent human to somebody he didn't have to be a decent human to. And that speaks volumes about a person to me.
Well, a lot of musicians have this, you know, this thing, this air about them where they are cooler than school, right? Like, I just don't know why. And now I'm getting a little bit worked up just thinking about this whole thing again.
As well you should.
But I don't know why somebody who had lined up an interview with you needs to prove that they're a fan. You know, like,
well, right.
I mean, it's okay. Maybe they're not a fan.
Right.
Maybe they heard your music for the first time today.
Yes.
And they want to tell the fucking world about it because they think it's great. You know, why do that? I don't understand.
Because here's exactly what happened. Junior Brown did not think, God, I hope I can get on at least two podcasts in Seattle. he thought, you know, another day, another dollar. Yeah. And, you know, let's make America great again, one concert at a time. I'm just now assuming his politics are also...
Well, it was a very good impression. I think if you went back and tried your Icelandic impression with Sigur Rós, it might go a little bit better.
Joining us now is Junior Brown. That's me saying Junior Brown in my Hope Landish. I think that Junior Brown did not set this up. His wife set it up. His wife probably told him, like, this is the kind of stuff you have to do. And he's like, I don't want to talk to some pissant.
Right.
Some pissant reporter probably doesn't know my music from a hole in the ground.
Sure.
And that's the person that's, we're supposed to go pick up calling. So maybe this is a good time to wrap this up. But
yeah.
I want to tell you that this was not your fault, Aaron.
I feel better.
He can't hurt you anymore.
He can't hurt me anymore. I feel better talking to you. I really appreciate you taking the time to spill your guts about that Sigur Rós thing.
Well,
but I'm sure that you've done it many, many times before. It just might have been a while.
Oh, no, but, you know, can I just put a button on that story, as you know, because I think we were at Sasquatch together.
I
ran into those dudes, and they were so sweet, the Sigur Rós guys. And I said to them, like, I don't know if you remember me, but I did this interview with you in New York, and they're like, you were that guy?
Right, right.
They all immediately lit up, and they were like, because it had become, I mean, you know, it's been viewed a lot of times, so it definitely is on their radar.
Sure.
And they were like, we want to come back on your show, and... I like apologize and all
and
this
make
stuff.
Amends and
yeah,
stuff. Yeah,
so those guys aren't bad dudes. That was one of the first interviews I think they'd done in the States, and it was just like a whole thing. But
and may I say, when that after that happened, watching you run up to the group we were hanging out with backstage
and
have this
them.
Look of like accomplishment on your face was pretty.
It was
pretty
probably
priceless.
Extremely cathartic for me.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
I want to tell you, Roden, I think this interview got off to a great start, a great middle, and a great ending. Okay, dude?
Thanks, man. I think I got sunstroke.
Yes, Junior Brown.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, dude.
As I said, I have never... In the 6 years, the 303 episodes of doing this show, I have never had something go that awry. Oh, my God. And big thanks to Luke Burbank for joining me on this episode 303. And big thanks to you for, listening in. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I know I did. It was great to sit out on Luke's boat, which that may have been the final voyage of his boat as him as the owner. So it was a pleasure and an honor to be out there in the middle of the lake listening to planes go by. God, there was a lot of planes. Man, and it just kept on increasing the amount of taking off and landing that was going on near our vessel. Let's see, Junior Brown. Well, what an interesting fella. We're going to go out today with a song from him called Highway Patrol. It's one of my favorite songs. I am still a huge fan of Junior Brown. So if he listens into this, I hope everything's okay with him. I guess no hard feelings because you still gave me some sort of content to play, right? We'll be back next week with a whole new episode, folks. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. It only takes a couple seconds to give us a 5-star rating and helps us out a lot in the long run, gets us up in the standings. We are also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, Cairo Radio, and now on the Google Play Store, all those apps. So go and check that out. Or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed using your own little podcatcher. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is @airraidnet. Or you can email me directly, aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Pledge to tell somebody about the show. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. Share it on social media. Tweet it out there if you like it. Show us, man. All right? And thank you to all of you who continue to do so. That is very, very nice. All right. We'll be back next week with a full new episode of the Air Raid Podcast, and we'll try to get it out on time, as usual. All right? Thank you guys so much for listening. This was actually a lot of fun. I was really, my heart was kind of broken after that interview with Junior Brown. And Thanks to you guys who listen to the show week in, week out, and thanks to my buddy Luke. Made me feel a lot better about this. And now I can look back and laugh at it, right? It's all part of the human experience. All right, this one's called Highway Patrol by Junior Brown. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode for you with Bob Martin. Bob Martin, good friend of the show. He's going to be joining us here in the backyard. All right, folks, have a great week. We love you. Bye-bye.
Too fast like you shouldn't do. You can bet your boots I'm coming after you. If you want to race, then get on a racetrack. Or if you try to run away, I'm gonna bring you back. I'm here to keep all the speeders driving slow. I'm just doing my job. I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol. Highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving. Job, I'm the highway patrol. I'm just a doing my job.